The Mishnah at the beginning of the second parak talks about the Kohen Gadol, and one particular dimension of the Kohen Gadol is Avelus. And if the Kohen Gadol is actually sitting Shiva for one of his seven relatives, then the Mishnah tells us what should be the Nusach, the formula for Nichum Avelim, when the people file by or come to visit the Kohen Gadol, what should they say? And the Mishnah says, Kol ha'om omrim lo, all the people should say to him, Anu kaparascha, will be your atonement. Vehu omer lehem, in his response, the Kohen Gadol responds and he says, Tis barchu min hashamayim, you should be blessed from heaven. So first we'll go through Rashi, and then we'll see what we have in the Gevuras Yitzchak. Rashi says, Banu tiskaper ata. He says, through us you should achieve atonement. V'anachnu tachtecha, and we are in place of you. L'chol haroi lavo alecha, for anything that should befall you as a result of maybe some imperfections in your lifestyle. So if there would have been punishments for you, we want to take the rap for it. We want to be in your place. Anachnu tachtecha. Says the Gevuras Yitzchak, Hainu Mishum, how does this work? Why should they be saying this to the Avil, in this case the Kohen Gadol? You know, is it a nice thing to say to someone, you know, you're going to be guilty and you're going to be punished, we're going to take over for you? Is that a nice thing to tell the Avil? So he bases himself on a Yerushalmi. And the Yerushalmi establishes that during Avelus, especially during the first 3 days of Avelus, Midas Hadin Mesucha al Ha'avel, the attribute of justice, of punishment, and harsh punishment is stretched out, so to speak, over the Avel. He's in a precious situation. In other words, let not the Avel fool himself into thinking that this terrible disaster that occurred, the death of a relative, has nothing to do with him. You know, the relative died, he was an older person, he died a natural death, or whatever happened. What does that mean about me? The answer is no. He's in the same boat as the other members of his family. Does anybody know why? You see, whenever a person suffers, suffering is a pointer that tells him that there's something not Beseder, you know, not so great about him. It's a message to him that he has to fix himself up, he has to rectify his sins, because if not, he will suffer. So whenever you're in the same boat, meaning you're suffering as well as a result of somebody else's suffering, you should know that that points an accusing finger at you. And the Yerushalmi says that this goes on for an entire year. When one member of the family dies, then the entire family for a full year is subject to the Midas Hadin HaMesucha Keneged Osa Mishpacha. So far so clear? Now, what Masechet in Shas, I'm just quizzing you, addresses the laws of Avelus? Moikotin, correct. So if you look at Moikotin, on Daf Chav Zayin Amid Beis, Omer Rabbi Levi, Avel, when a person sits Shiva, Shlosha Yomim Arishonim, during the first 3 days of his Avelus, Yires Atzmo, he should view himself, Ki'ilu Cherev Munachas Lo Bein Shtei Ksefav, as if the sword of justice is hanging, is hovering between his shoulders, meaning around his neck. That's a very harsh statement. And the Rambam actually codifies in Hilchas Avelus. You know, anyone who wants to learn Hilchas Avelus, the magnum opus on Hilchas Avelus is the Rambam. Dedicates tens of chapters to the laws of Avelus. And he writes that included in the Avelus of an Avel, in other words, what's part of the mitzvah of Avelus? It's of course, the mitzvah of Avelus is to express one's grief. You know, he doesn't inter one of his relatives, the dead, with cruelty and cold feelings. There's a grief, there's a mourning, and not only that, he also honors the dead by sitting Shiva on their behalf. But more than that, the Rambam adds another element into the mitzvah of Avelus. Sheyid'ad mi midas hadin. The Rambam says he should be afraid of judgment. V'yafashbeish b'masov, he should introspect and examine his actions. Ulekach, and therefore omrim li'ovil l'nachamo. Therefore, it makes sense, says the Rambam, that when we're coming to console the bereaved, we say to him, "Sha'anu tachtechel chol aroy lavo alecha." And we're going to soon see that that applies not just to the Kohen Gadol, but to anyone who's sitting Shiva, v'hu omer lehem, and therefore he responds to Varchu min Hashamayim. Wow, I have to recognize with a great sense of gratitude what you're doing on my behalf, and therefore I want to give quid pro quo, I want to give you something back. So what do? You don't write out a check. Instead, you say to him, to Varchu min Hashamayim, you give him a blessing.
Are you starting your class or anyone?
Just started now.
Okay, and what now?
We're talking a little bit of Avelus, about mourning.
Okay.
And how you give Nichum, how do you console and bereave the mourning? David, did you want to ask a question?
Sure. Is it...
Go ahead. David's going to ask us a question.
Okay. Do you have a handout?
I would give you mine, but I need it for a little while.
Okay.
So look on with David, if you don't mind.
Yeah. I'm just going to ask you, is the implication that when someone passes away, if everybody in his family was of sterling character, and great speaker, the person would have died? Because...
I don't know if we're going to go that far into say that, let's say, my sins are going to cause someone else to die. You know, we're not going that far. I'm guilty, and I have to do tshuva for my sins.
We're all guilty of something.
Correct. And ain't tzaddik ba'aretz, no one is above the law. We all could have done a little bit better. And when somebody dies in the family, the members of the family have to realize that this is a moment in time which is called midas hadin. That means God is judging the world. It's like if I give you a mashal, when God decided to destroy the Dor HaMabul, that was because of Midas HaDin. And the Gemara tells us at the end of Sanhedrin that even Noach himself was included in that din. He wasn't so perfect. Maybe he could have prayed on behalf of the members of the generation. But later on, the Pasuk says that Noach matzachem b'ani Hashem. So anyway, there was a special compensation or dispensation for Noach that he didn't die, he didn't perish in the Mabul. That's called Midas HaDin. You may remember that Balak brought Bilam to curse Klal Yisrael. Now, how did Bilam think in his mind that he could accomplish his goal of cursing Klal Yisrael? So apparently, there's a moment of time, which is called Za'am, if you've ever heard it, right. Divine wrath, where there's Midas HaDin, where God in his heavenly court is scrutinizing our actions and he's finding faults. Now, again, there are different periods of time within this generation, within a day, within a person's life, when he is subject to Midas HaDin. Everyone is subject to Midas HaDin on one day of the year. Which day do I have in mind?
Yom Kippur.
Well, Yom Kippur, maybe not so. Yom Kippur is the time of atonement, but Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah is the time of Din. Now, in the life of an individual, the days of judgment are during Avelus. A person should be very concerned, you know, really nervous about Avelus. That's what he's quoting in the name of the Yerushalmi in Moed Katan, that especially the first 3 days of Avelus, those are days of judgment. So the fact that one of your relatives died, Nebuch, is an accusing finger, so to speak. It's a wake up call. Realize that you're not so perfect either. Not David, I'm not going as far as to say this, that you're
next.
No. They say that your iniquities caused this death. You know, this is not a guilt trip. You know, we're not talking about blame, but we're talking about blaming yourself. That's called yifashbeish b'masov. He should check out his actions, and after cheshbon hanefesh, he should realize that he's got to shape up. Everybody has to shape up. There's no one who's absolutely perfect. But the real chiddush here is that the people who are coming to console the bereaved, they could say to the bereaved, Kaparoscha Aleinu, that if you are subject to Midas HaDin and God is going to mete out punishment to you for your imperfections, then we're willing to step into your shoes and to accept that kapara on your behalf. People don't realize that that's an original Jewish concept. You know, some people think that comes from a different religion, but you know, the other religions may have adopted it or imitated our religion. But in our religion, that's why it says in the Gemara Brachos that a tzaddik should be makabel yisurim ba'ava. He should accept upon himself suffering with love. What's so great about suffering? Who wants to suffer? But it could be that under certain circumstances, when the tzaddik suffers, that is a kapara for the entire generation. And that's why if you take a look at the Asara Ruge Malchus, you know, the 10 martyrs that we speak about both on Yom Kippur and on Tisha B'Av, they accepted upon themselves a punishment on behalf of the entire generation. In the case of a Kohen Gadol, when he dies, the death of a Kohen Gadol is a kapara for all rotschim, for those who committed murder, the shogeg. But now let's look in the next paragraph that starts with the word vehine. And he says the following. Why is it that we turn to the Kohen Gadol and we say to him, you know what? We are accepting a kapara on your behalf. It doesn't say in the Mishnah that that's the formula to be Menachem HaMelech. The Mishnah, for those who are learning with me, the Mishnah addresses two individuals. Number one, the Kohen Gadol, and number two, the Melech. When it comes to the Kohen Gadol, the Mishnah has a whole presentation about how we should be Menachem the Kohen Gadol. It doesn't say a word about how we should be Menachem, how we should console the king. So what is it here about the Kohen Gadol that the Mishnah says is a very unique formulation of how we should console the Kohen Gadol? So we're going to look at the Maral Prague in his work Derech Chaim, which is his super commentary on Pirkei Avos. Now, for those of you who enjoy Avos and you like to look into the commentaries, I would not recommend the Maral, unless you have a lot of time on your hand and a lot of good shiurim, a lot of good guidance. The Maral is murder. There are a lot more accessible and there are a lot easier commentaries on Avos. You don't have to stretch your arm out to the Maral. But if you're interested in some of the more sophisticated and nuanced, profound issues in the Mishnah, then you have to learn the Maral. That's on a very profound level. And the Maral says that what's unique about the Kohen Gadol, he has the role of the Makasher. Do you know that when we learn Shabbos, there are 39 categories of Malacha. One of them is called Makasher or Kosher. What does that mean? To tie together. That's why we don't make knots on Shabbos. Do you know that?
Mm-hmm.
The only exception, maybe, is Glila. If you've ever had Glila on Shabbos, so sometimes they make a knot. So there, the poskim say it's not a permanent knot, because by Monday we're going to be taking apart the knot. But unless you have many Sifrei Torah, and this Sefer Torah is used on Shabbos, another is going to be used during the week, so then you have a real problem if you're going to knot it. Now they have Velcro. Clips. Have you seen it?
Yeah, they got clips.
Clips and Velcro.
What about your shoes?
That's a real serious problem. Some say that we pass like the Chachom against Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda's sheet is aniva, which means a bow is makasher, is meleches kosher. You can't make bows on Shabbos. But the Chachamim disagree with Rabbi Yehuda. So if we accept la halacha of the Chachamim, maybe a bow is considered something that's not permanent. It's very easy to undo a bow. But the Kohen Gadol is the one human being who represents the makasher. The makasher means he ties together. Who or what is he tying together? His shoes? Kohen Gadol very rarely wears shoes because he's pretty busy in the Beis HaMikdash. Anybody have any idea what the Maral is going to say? Why he classifies and describes the Kohen Gadol as the Makasher?
The Araveros. All of Araveros in Yom Kippur time?
Well, I'm not sure if he connects Araveros, but he says he's the Makasher of Klal Yisrael. Right. He's the glue that cements all of Klal Yisrael. What does it mean? Our nation is called the Goy Echad Ba'aretz. It's one united people, Halavai, right? And we need some sort of an agent, if you will, who cements us all together. And who's meant to play that role as the agent? It's the Kohen Gadol. The Kohen Gadol is going to represent us, like you mentioned Yom HaKippurim, but the whole year round he represents Klal Yisrael. But he says, Eino makasher osam rak mipnei shehu bi'atzmo makushar imohem. He can only play the role of tying and binding together the people of Israel into one nation if he himself is connected to the people. Ad shehaya oev es habrios, he loves all the people of Israel. Who amongst Kohanim would be the paradigm of that concept who connects and loves all the people of Israel? Aaron HaKohen. Aaron HaKohen is famous. And that's why when Aaron HaKohen dies, it says that the entire people of Israel cry over his loss for a full 30 days. Because he was connected to them and he connected them together. He made them into one nation. V'al yado, he says, kol beis Yisrael mu'uchadim. Through the agency of the Kohen Gadol, of Aaron, all the people of Israel were connected. Now, where do we find a connection between members of the Jewish people? Besides this Aaron, HaKohen, the Kohen Gadol, that's the entire community of Israel. But in a smaller microcosm, where do we find a connection that connects people together? It starts with an F, ends with a Y.
Family?
Family, exactly. The greatest makasher is the family, and especially the father and the mother. They are meant to play the role to connect the family together and form one entity. What happens, and that's the way of all flesh, when the father, the main person in the family, dies. Now, the children will sit shiva. They have to experience avelus. For an entire year, the Gemara says in Kiddushin, out of respect for their parents, they declare Hareini Kaparas Mishkovo. Have you ever heard of that? No? Okay. I went through it twice. In the Sfarim, if you ever look into a Sefer and somebody writes a letter of what's called a letter of approbation, you know, that's a Haskama at the beginning of a Sefer, very often, if you look carefully, you'll see after the person signs his name, he writes Hei Chaf Mem. Hei Chaf Mem is an abbreviated form of Hareini Kaparas Mishkovo, which means that a child makes a declaration that he's willing to take upon himself the suffering and the punishment for his parents. That's an amazing sacrifice that a child has to do for his parents. Rashi says in the Gemara there, I'll lie upon me, yavo kol ra haroi, any evil that should befall my father or my mother during that period of judgment should come to me, yavo nafshi. And just in the same way that because of the close relationship between parents and children, that makasher, therefore it makes sense that the son should accept upon himself, recognizing that tremendous bond that he has with his father, that he wants to take the sacrifice and accept the suffering in the place of his father, so too the people of Israel have to come to the Kohen Gadol and say, we are so connected to you. You are the glue of the family that keeps the whole family of the nation of Israel together. Therefore, we accept upon ourselves to be a kapara on your behalf. And then the Kohen Gadol responds, and he says, Tevarchu min hashamayim, you should get blessed from heaven. Okay.
After a while, I mean, you probably have your own kapara to do. Maybe take it from your parents.
Right.
That's a lot of burden.
That's a heck of a burden, yes. And that's why the first year of after the loss of a parent is a very serious business. You know, yeah. it's not something that we should make light of. What else does the Kohen Gadol have in terms of when we come to be? What else does the Mishnah teach us about the way we have to console the Kohen Gadol? So the Mishnah tells us that we have to bring him a meal. Of the first meal that he eats in the base Avel, which is called the Sudas Havra. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah.
It means other people bring him the meal. He can't get involved in preparing his own meal. He's busy with his Avelus. He's completely obsessed and preoccupied with his mourning. And we have to bring him his meal. Okay, had the Mishnah stop there, that's fine. But the Mishnah goes on. We have to eat the meal with him together, and we have to sit on the ground while he's sitting on a low bench. All this is because of the great respect that we have for the Kohen Gadol. Now this Mishnah is codified by the Tur in Yoredeya Simon Shinai in Ches, and the Tur quotes the Ramban. So this is on the bottom right of your page. The Ramban says, Kishemavrim es ha'ovel, when we bring this meal for the ovel, the first meal, ochlin v'shosim imo kol b'nei mishpachto, number one, his entire family should join for the meal, and number two, ha'oskim behesped, those who were involved, because they're very, very connected to this tragedy, to the deceased, they are involved not only in hesped, which means to eulogize the deceased, but they also have to sit down and eat that first meal together with the ovel. Rabbo said, what does that mean in conceptual terms? What can you prove from this Ramban? Let me see if I can lead you slowly to answer this question. Who is obligated in the mitzvah of Avelus? If I would wake you up in the middle of the night and ask for a knee-jerk response to that question, who is obligated in Avelus?
Someone who passed away.
Someone who lost a relative. So it's all about relatives. No, the Ramban is telling us something else. That not only is there an obligation incumbent upon the relatives, but there's also an obligation incumbent upon those who are not related, although they don't have the same, you know, you don't measure their avelus in the same way that you know, it's not a full 7 days of avelus, but at least as far as the first meal is concerned, not only are they doing a chesed by being very magnanimous on behalf of the avelim and bringing them the meal, but they also have to participate in the avelus. They also are available, and therefore they have to eat that meal together with the avel.
It's like sitting shiva.
They are sitting shiva just for that moment of Seudas Havra, and they get a mitzvah of avelus. So it's not just a mitzvah of comforting the bereaved and saying you're not alone, we're with you, but moreover it's our avelus. We are also mourning and we are bereaved over the death. V'chol misha meitzar, anyone who's bitzar, tzar means he's in anguish, bitzaroso, because of this terrible tzara, this terrible loss, achin nitzav ponov, his face changes, the color of his face, he gets a little bit white, meirov tzaro, because he's so aggrieved over the mourning, over the loss of this person. So Rav Osai, don't think that you only grieve over the loss of one of your relatives. The Ramban says that you could grieve over someone's loss even though he's not a relative of yours. And not only that, that expresses itself halachically in the halacha of ochlim imo, that they have to sit down and eat together with the avelim. They don't have to sit on the ground. When they eat with the Kohen Gadol who's in Avil, the Kohen Gadol lost one of his relatives, and the Kohen Gadol is sitting on a low bench, they have to be lower than him, and that's called Kvodo. That's called already the special respect they have for the Kohen Gadol. So imagine how many mitzvahs you could fulfill by consoling the Kohen Gadol. Number one, the first mitzvah that you fulfill is Chesed. Love thy neighbor like you love thyself. Certainly you should love the Kohen Gadol, and now that he loves you, and that's why the bracha of the Kohenim always ends with what word?
Shalom.
No, I need to say the Berachas HaMitzvah, I'm sorry, of the Kohenim always end with what word? Be'ava, right? Because the Kohenim have to love us the same way that Aaron HaKohen loves us, and that gives them the ability to bless us out of love. So number one, we love the Kohen Gadol just like he loves us, and that expresses itself in the chesed that we are menachem him, and not only do we console him, we say anu kaparoscha, that we should accept your punishment. That's number one. So that's a great chesed. Then we get to number two, and number two is avelus, that we also participate in his avelus. and therefore we eat the Suda Savra together with him. If it was only Chesed, we'll just feed him the Suda Savra and then go home. No, we can't go home. We have to sit down and eat the Suda with him, because we are in a state of anguish and mourning just like he is. Maybe not on the same level, but as he is. Then finally we have a third mitzvah that we be Mekayim. We sit on the floor. The Kohen Gadol is going to sit on a low bench. We'll sit on the floor. And that's a key of the mitzvah of Kvod Kohen Gadol, to be Mechabim the Kohen Gadol. And now we're on the left column, if you want to follow the text inside. Lo Cholitz. At this point, we fast forward to the Melech. So the subject of this discussion is the Melech. And what happens is, the king has a brother. Unfortunately, the brother died without children. He was married. And what happens when a man dies without children?
Brother has to marry Yibam.
Correct, Yibam. His brother has to marry her. So the Mishnah says that in the case of a Melech, there is no Yibam. We don't require the king to marry his sister-in-law, his late brother's wife, nor do we require him to give her Chalitza. Now, Chalitza is like a get in the case of an Eish HaSish. Chalitza means that the Torah allows her to be removed from the state of Yibum, of what's called the Yivam HaLashuk, so she can marry everyone else, if there's Chalitza. Now, in the case of Chalitza, there's something involved in Chalitza which is disgraceful, so to speak. What is that? Anybody know what I have in mind?
Taking off the shoe,
but more than taking off the shoe.
Spitting.
Right? She has to spit in front of him. And then she reads a parasha, which is also humiliating. This person refuses l'hakim shem zera li'achiv. He doesn't want to keep the zera of his late brother alive. For a melech,
can't do that.
That's below his dignity. You can't spit in front of the king. No way, no how. And therefore there's no chalitza. Yes, now, in the case of Yibum, the Mishnah says that he doesn't marry his sister-in-law, and we're not sure why. Now, keep in mind, just to, in parentheses, if it would have been a case of a Kohen Gadol, I know very well why he can't marry his sister-in-law. What's that called?
He can't marry
a Almana, because she was married. He has to marry a woman who was never married.
Right.
The Suleh Yigah. But a Melech could marry an Almana. Why isn't he Mekayim the mitzvah of Yibum vis-a-vis his sister-in-law when his brother died? So what we're going to see here in a minute, I'm just giving you a little bit of a preview of coming attractions, is that if there's no Chalitza, then there's no Yibum. Chalitza and Yibum are two sides of a coin. And they go together like horse and carriage, and if there's no Chalitza, there's no Yibum. However, there's another explanation, which is also offered, that we won't see today, and that is that it's also below the dignity of the Melech to marry his sister-in-law. And the reason for that is because the children of that marriage will not be his children, but rather his late brother's children.
Really? Even if they're his children? Biologically,
they're his children, but they're called his son's children. And the pasuk goes out of its way, Parshas Ki Teitzeh. Wow. We don't have time to go through the parsha, but the Torah says, "Lahakim shem al shem achiv," meaning the children will be called the children of his late brother. He's just doing the action to bring these children into the world.
Wow.
So that might also be below the dignity of the king to get involved in a marriage where the children are not his, they're someone else's, even though it's his own brother.
Wow.
But we're going to see the first interpretation. And this is based... Yeah, right, Ruvain?
Did David and Elk have children with Shaul as well?
But that wasn't Yibum, you're right. The question is, that's a different issue, which maybe I don't think we'll get to today, we don't have time, that you're not allowed to marry the widow of a melech. David was the exception because he himself was a melech. So a king is allowed to marry the widow of a previous king. Okay, but let's... Okay. Is that relevant to us right now? Oh, I'm sorry.
Just wondering,
I want to focus on Chalitza.
Did he have children with...
I don't know. I'm not sure. I could look it up if you like. Okay, so now the Rambam writes the following. This is Perek Beis Milchus Moloch, and the Rambam writes, V'eino Cholitz. The king does not give chalitza to his sister-in-law if his brother died childless, shenemar, because the pasuk says, v'yakah b'fanav, she spits in front of him. V'zebi zayon, and this is humiliating to the king. Now the Rambam adds the next few words. You might want to underline them. V'hoil v'eino choletz eino miyamin. Not the way I told you, which is an alternative interpretation that these children will not be called on his name, but simply there's a mechanical rule. If there's no chalitza, then there's no yibum. So we're going to look into the halacha and we're going to say the following, that whenever there's no chalitza, then the Rambam says, ipso facto, there's no yibum. And the Bartnura, who's the super commentary on the Mishnah, he writes this in our Mishnah, to explain our Mishnah. He says, kol she'eino bas chalitza, if she cannot get chalitza, eino bas yibum. She cannot get chalitza, as we said before, because it would be disgraceful to the melech, and therefore she doesn't get yibum as well. Now, there's another commentary that was written hundreds of years later, that's the Tosus Yontif. Okay? The Ra'av, Bar Tanura, he was a Sfaradi, and the Tosus Yontif was, his name was Heller, he was an Ashkenazi. And he says the following. We only find the following rule, that if there's no yibum, then there's no chalitza. If a woman doesn't fall for yibum, then there's no need for chalitza, because if she doesn't fall for yibum, she's not in the parasha of yibum. Where do we find the reverse? That if there's no chalitza, therefore there's no yibum. Do you hear what he's asking? In other words, there are two directions here. And the Tosus Yontif is emphasizing one, and the Rambam seems to emphasize the other. The direction of the Tosus Yontif is, if there's no yibum, then there's no chalitza. The Rambam, on the other hand, says, if there's no chalitza, then there's no yibum. Which will it be? So if you take a look at Tosus in two places, in Masechet Yevamos, he says the following, Misha hayanasin l'shtei nashim. You remember the old days, according to biblical law, a man could be married to two women, and he dies. So now what happens is, he's got two women who fall for yibum. So the halacha is the following. Only one of these two women are considered in the ballpark, so to speak. Is biasa o chalitzasa shal achas poteris tsarasa. Meaning, the yavam, the live brother, the surviving brother, has one of two choices. He could either be miyavim, that's called biyasa, notice he has a relationship with one of the two, or, if he doesn't want, chalitzasa, he gives her chalitza. The other one, who's called the tsara, the second wife, she doesn't need anything. Because, bayis echadu bona v'eino bona shtei batin. The Torah says that he only has to build one family, and not two families. If he would marry and be miyavim both, that would be bona shtei batim. Now, he has to be bona one of these two. And again, we're not sure exactly how he chooses which one he's going to be miyavim. But be that as it may, if he decides not to be miyavim, so instead of being bona, he gives a chalitza. And that's included under the next principle called bayis echeru choletz, mi'eno choletz shtei batim. Then if he decides he's not interested in yibum, he's out of here, then he gives chalitza, but only to one of them. The other one is completely out. But there's no such thing as giving chalitza to one of them and being miyabim the other. It says Tosus, why not? Which direction does Tosus take?
First chalitza.
Correct. First we're going to judge when there's chalitza, and then we're going to judge when there's yibum. That's the language of Tosus. So he takes one of these two women and he decides that he wants to give a chalitza. He doesn't want to be miyamim. In such a case, the other tzara, the other wife of his late brother, does not fall for yibum or chalitza. Why? Because bayis echad hu choletz, v'einu choletz shtei batim. Which means that as far as the other tzara is concerned, since she's not ola l'chalitza, then she's not ola l'yibum. So she doesn't need neither chalitza nor yibum, and she's a free agent. She can marry whoever she wants. So just to summarize this paragraph, we can line up two views, and we'll start analyzing them in the few minutes that we have today. Maybe we'll finish it up tomorrow. According to one view, and that's the view that we're accepting now, in terms of the melech, that since he doesn't have to give chalitza to his sister-in-law because that would be below his dignity, v'yarka lefanav. Therefore, there's no possibility of yibum because we're going with the direction of the ra'av, of the bartanura, which is based on the Rambam, that if there's no chalitza, then there's no yibum. Tosis Yantav, on the other hand, thinks that it should go the other way around, that it all depends on whether there's yibum. And that makes a lot of sense. You know, is she included in yibum? If she is, she needs chalitza if there's no yibum. And Tosis and Yevamos in two places seems to reflect not the shita of the Tosis Yantav, but rather the shita of the Rambam and the shita of the Ra'av, that kol she'ena ola lechalitza, ena ola liyibum. Now we get to Rabbi Akiva Eger. Does anybody know when he lived?
18th century.
Excellent. He lived actually in the 19th century. He started in the 18th century, and then he lived in the 19th century. So we're not talking about someone who is from the Bartanura lived about 500 years ago. We're not going back that far in history when we talk about Rabbi Akiva Eger. But the truth is that I have to tell you, Rabbi Akiva Eger, when he says something, it has a tremendous impact. Normally, someone in the 19th century doesn't have the impact of Rabbi Akiva Eger. I mean, the man was a genius of geniuses. He was probably the greatest mind in Ashkenazic Jewry, except for the Vilna Gaon, you know, for hundreds of years. And he wrote a commentary on the Mishnah. And in his commentary on the Mishnah, he goes back to Tosfos and he has a problem. Why? Because there's something called a chereshes. Now, literally, you translate chereshes as a deaf woman, but really, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about a mute woman. So she doesn't have the capacity to speak. Now, if she doesn't have the capacity to speak, she would not be able to do chalitza in the way that the Torah prescribes chalitza, namely by reading a parsha. And the halacha is, eina ola lechalitza. Right? There's no chalitza in this case. So you follow what happened. A woman was married to a man. He died childless. And now she falls for yibum. Well, let's say, for example, the live surviving brother is not interested in yibum. So what does he have to give her? Chalitza, but she can't speak. So since she can't speak, there's no possibility of chalitza. That's called eina ola lechalitza. But ola liyibum. But if the brother wants to be miyabim her, then he gets the mitzvah of yibum. Now we just finished saying that according to the Rambam, the Bartanura, and Tosfos, the rule is that if there's no chalitza, there's no yibum. Now, in this case, she's a chareshes, and therefore there's no chalitza. If there's no chalitza, there should be no yibum. And yet, the Gemara says in Yevamos, the way Tosfos interprets the Gemara, that although she has no chalitza, nevertheless, she's included under yibum. That seems to irritate or undermine the principle that if eino chaletzes, eino misyabemes. Once there's no chalitza, there's no yibum, David. Don't say no. I want an answer to this question.
What was the question?
Okay, here's the question. We have a rule that goes as follows. Again, the Tosfos Yontif never accepted this rule, but everybody else seems to accept this rule, that if there's no chalitza, then there's no yibum. The melech can't get chalitza because it's disgraceful, therefore he doesn't have the mitzvah of yibum. So she, the sister of the melech, is outside the whole mechanism, the whole enterprise of chalitza and yibum. It's a package deal. No chalitza, no yibum. And we saw that in the case of a man who was married to two wives, then one of them will get chalitza. The other one doesn't need chalitza because it says, bayis echad u'cholitz v'enu u'cholitz shnei batin. And therefore there's no yibum for the second wife because there's no chalitza. Again, reiterating this principle that if there's no chalitza, there's no what? Yibum. Frek the Tosfos Rabbi Akiva Eger, I'll give you a case where there's no chalitza, but there is yibum, and that's the case of a chereshes. Since she cannot speak, therefore there's no chalitza, but there will be yibum. Who could answer Rabbi Kivega's question? I'm challenging you.
Well, you know, she could just throw down the shoe to do chalitza, right? I mean, and
so for that we have to learn more of Masechta Yevamos. You know, Masechta Yevamos is not an easy Masechta. If we had about 2 years, maybe we could scratch the surface. For those who do it in Daf Yomi, you know, they do it in a couple of months, but they don't really know what's going on. But I'm saying for someone who really knows Yevamos, anyway, Kriyas HaParsha, reading the Parsha in the case of Yibum is, here again, it's very complicated. It's not critical, but it's critical. What do I mean? There is chalitza without reading the parasha, but that's only if someone is royal chalitza, if they have the capacity to read the parasha, but for one reason or another, they forgot to read the parasha, they omitted it. But if you have someone, like a woman who's a chereshus, and she's not capable, she doesn't have the capacity to speak, she's physically blemished, she's mute, in such a case, there is no chalitza. Because chalitza requires, yeah, there's no shlichus in chalitza either. You can't send an agent to chalitza.
Yourself and have it notarized, or two witnesses or something. A document.
No, it's got to be a maisa chalitza. And that maisa chalitza it consists of three parts. It's a ritual act. Number one, she has to take off his shoe. Number two, she has to spit in front of him. And number three, she has to read a parasha. Now, if one of these three were left out because it was an oversight, that's one thing. So in the case of Kriyas HaParsha, it's not Markevis, but yet we need that she has the capacity to read the Parsha. And therefore, Chareshus is excluded from Chalitza. There's no Chalitza. However, she is included under Yibum. And therefore, her brother-in-law, who's alive and well, will be miyavim him if he so chooses. But there's no chalitza. So here we see a case, says Rabbi Kivega, where even though there's no chalitza, there is yibum. That seems to violate our principle that if there's no chalitza, there's no yibum. What do you say, David?
Well, maybe it's a hat.
You want to be engaged, so I'm engaging you.
It's a hat to me. Maybe, you know, we have a rule, but rules are meant to be broken. In this case, the rule
No. It's much more fundamental than that. And I haven't seen Rabbi Kivega, but I can tell you his answer. The answer is that there are two reasons why there's no chalitza. There's no chalitza because the entire enterprise of chalitza was excluded. Or there's no chalitza because you don't have the mechanical ability to do chalitza. Here's the difference. When the Torah says that choleitz levayis echad v'lo l'shnei batim, and he gave chalitza to one of these two women that were married to his brother, then the Torah says the entire enterprise of mitzvah's chalitza with regard to the second wife is completely excluded. Or, for example, when the Torah says v'yarkal afanav to the exclusion of a melech, therefore the whole enterprise of chalitza is excluded. The very nature of chalitza is inappropriate here. It's out of whack. Not so in the case of Chereshes. She really deserves to have chalitza. She's included in chalitza, but mechanically she cannot implement that chalitza. Let's look at it inside. He says, "V'tirtzu." This is on the third line. "D'cheresh v'chareshes b'nei chalitza." You want to underline those three words? B'nei chalitza. Do you have a place? I don't know. It's the second paragraph on the left column that starts v'hinei b'tosus. Yeah. So if you drop down to the third line, he says, "B'nei chalitza." These people are included in chalitza. Ella defumayu, their mouths. Hu dekoyevle, which literally means that they're suffering in their mouth, meaning they cannot speak. Oh, says Rabbi Kivega. Now let's analyze the case of a melech. So here's where Rabbi Kivega disagrees with Berzon, but he doesn't have to justify himself. But I told you that in the case of a melech, there is no chalitza. No. In the case of a melech, there would be chalitza. The only problem is we're insulting him. So he says that's already a side problem. Melech bar chalitza hu. Hachinami melech bar chalitza. He's included under chalitza. Ela di eno rashoi leganos atzmo. He cannot humiliate himself through the action of chalitza. And that's gamkein kimo bepume koivle. It's like the case of Chereshes. Just like in the case of Chereshes, she's included in chalitza, but she cannot implement the chalitza. The melech is also included in chalitza, just that he cannot allow himself to disgrace himself, and therefore the implementation of chalitza becomes impossible.
So, can the melech have yibum then? The deaf woman can have yibum without the chalitza.
That's exactly Rabbi Kivega's question.
Can the melech have yibum then?
Why shouldn't we say the following? following, that a melech is really included on the chalitza. He has the same status as a chareshes. Just like in the case of chareshes, she doesn't have chalitza because there's no possibility of implementing the chalitza, but she is included in yibum. So too, in the case of melech, there's no possibility of implementing chalitza because she would spit in front of him, and that's degrading to the king, but she should be Messiah Bemes. Why does that Mishnah say that lo chol eitz v'lo miyabim? As we saw in the Rambam, let's go back to the top of the page, I mean the left column. The Rambam says, Eino chol eitz shedem v'yarka b'fun of ezeh b'zoyon v'hoil v'eino chol eitz eitz miyabim. Why does the Rambam say so? I mean, the Mishnah says so. Since he's not included in chalitza, he's not included in yibum. Wait a minute, says Rabbi Kivenga. What about the case of a chereshes? She's not included in chalitza, and yet she's included in yibum. And Melech and Chereshes have one thing in common. They both really are included in Chalitza. The Torah didn't exclude them. It's not like the exclusion of Shnei Batim, that there's no Chalitza to two wives. Here, the Torah says the implementation is a problem. There's a blockage in implementing Chalitza. In the case of a Chereshes, the blockage is that she's Eina Re'uya L'Kriya. She can't read the Parsha. She's mute. In the case of a Melech, you cannot implement Chalitza because that would be disgraceful to the Melech. You're undermining the whole monarchy, so to speak, when we allow it to spit in front of him. But if you ask me, is he included in Chalitza? Why not? The Torah never excluded him from Chalitza. And therefore, he has the same status as the Chereshes. In the case of Chereshes, despite the fact that there's no Chalitza, she's included in Yibum. We should apply the same rule, asks Rabbi Kivenga, to the case of a Melech. Why does the Rambam say, Ho'il v'eino choletz, eino miyabim? So I'm going to try to keep you in suspense. So maybe you'll come back tomorrow. And hopefully, by tomorrow, we'll try to solve this problem. Okay, then? So let me take this opportunity to wish everyone a great day. And
is this year every day? Is it?
This is on Mondays and Tuesdays, and that's the experiment we're doing now. Oh. In a couple of weeks, we might try a different experiment and do it on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. We're just trying to figure out.
We scheduled scripting on Monday and Wednesday, I think.
Correct. But that's because the secretary is in a very warm climate now. Not so warm. It's about 75 degrees. And that's in California. What's the name of the place? It's a very special city. I was never there. I heard it's like Shangri-La. It goes from 70 degrees to 75 degrees.
San Diego.
San Diego. That's what it is. So.
Oh, but this is tomorrow.
Where? So the secretary usually.
Oh, I know. She's her daughter. I mean, she's the daughter of Rabbi Atiyah.
Describe.
He's in my he lives in the college area.
Oh, that's right. Aren't you also from San Diego?
Yeah,
no?
Yeah, over here.
Okay,
just right next to her.
So she's now actually. I think she's in transit now, but she hasn't gotten. Is she? Oh, what should I say? She hasn't been accessible for me to get her to change the schedule. So there are a number of fine-tuned points that I want to change the schedule. Like maybe in addition to Sanhedrin, maybe we should learn Yoredeah and study for Smicha. There are all sorts of ideas that I have. But she's now out of commission, so I don't have access to the, you know, to the all the media that she has access to.
Did she leave last night?
I don't know. I think she's leaving today, or she left today, or she's on the way.
I want to ask you about. You're saying the husband, not the husband, but the brother of the deceased, the brother of the deceased brother, or the king, who's got a deceased brother, did they give chalitza, or does the woman perform chalitza?
Yes, she performs chalitza.
But the brother would grant her chalitza.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. He makes the decision and she does the chalitza.
And if we go on the halacha of Rabbi Akiva, what would be the situation if the melech has already 18 wives and he's not supposed to have another to do you?
So therefore, she would not fall for yibum for a different reason.
Oh, she would not.
That's an excellent point. But in a case where he could marry her, then there's no yibum, says the Rambam, because since she doesn't have chalitza, she doesn't have yibum. And Rabbi Kivenga says, why is she different than a chereshes? Okay, then.